Our next presentation will come from Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Clarence Watson. And I'm sure we're going to have a whole different perspective at Oklahoma State.
Unfortunately, I'm afraid this is going to be same song, different day. You're going to see a lot of similarities between the two presentations, but we are neighboring states, at least neighborly most of the time. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you this afternoon about some of the things that are going on in Oklahoma. And I thought before I got started, I wanted to say a little bit about my co-author. A few of you in the room probably knew Brent. Dr. Westerman lost his battle with cancer late last year. He was really responsible for the restructuring of our branch station system, and a lot of the policies and procedures that he instituted have stood us in good stead and have seen us through some pretty difficult times. What I'd like to do this afternoon is give you a little bit of background on the station, a little bit of the history, also look at a little bit of the environment and the climate conditions that we face and why we need an extensive branch station system and how we might go about maintaining that. Then I'm going to switch gears and talk a little bit about some of our successful research programs and then conclude with just some general remarks about the experiment stations and where I see some of the future challenges ahead of us. Oklahoma is a relatively young state. We just achieved statehood in 1907. We were the 46th state. Prior to statehood, Oklahoma was actually composed of two territories, Indian Territory in the east and the Oklahoma Territory in the west. And most people think of Oklahoma as being settled by a land run. Well, in fact, it was a series of land runs. There were about seven or eight of these, the most famous being the land run of 1889. And there were a number of people who slipped in early during that process and staked their claims, and they got the name Sooners. And early on, the term Sooners had some rather derogatory connotations to it. It was something like claim jumper or horse thief. The actual area in the 1889 land run was an area in central Oklahoma known as the unassigned lands. This was about 2 million acres. And present-day Oklahoma State University and the Oklahoma Ag Experiment Station are just within the confines of that land. In fact, we have a monument on one of our stations in Stillwater memorializing the land run, saying where Oklahoma began. We are a very varied state, maybe not quite as varied as Texas, David, but we'll give you a run for your money. We have some 5 distinct climatic zones, 11 different ecoregions, and 2,500 different soil types. We are also characterized by water. There are a number of major rivers flowing through the state and a number of large impoundments, particularly in the east side of the state. Many of these impoundments were set up for flood control, but today they're used for a myriad of uses, including power generation, recreation, surface water for drinking, and some of the ones in the west are used for irrigation. This process was sometimes referred to as building a state, and what it gave us was more shoreline than the Atlantic and the Gulf Coast combined. And even though we're a landlocked state, we do have a port to the Gulf of Mexico. It's located at Catoosa, just east of Tulsa, and we can float barges down the Arkansas River to the Mississippi and into the Gulf of Mexico. It's a large, thriving port and was a real economic boon to our agriculture there in Oklahoma. In terms of demographics, we're largely a rural state. There's only 2 population centers in the state of any significance. This is the Oklahoma City and the Tulsa area, and each of those greater areas has about 1 million each. The rest of the state, extremely rural. In terms of diversity, we're one of only 4 states in the country that have more than 10 ecoregions as defined by EPA. And that runs everywhere from cypress swamps down in the southeast corner of the state to high desert at the end of the panhandle in the west. And also, people often think of Oklahoma as just one big wheat field. And I would say they're half right. As you see from this aerial photo, the eastern half of the state is heavily wooded and extremely mountainous. In terms of diversity in topography, we run from 289 feet in the southeast to almost 5,000 feet at the edge of the panhandle. We see a 7-degree difference in average normal temperature from one end of the state to the other. And that results in a 60-day difference in growing season as you move from southeast to northwest. Interestingly, the five most productive ag counties in Oklahoma are the three in the panhandle and the two in the extreme southeastern corner. So in terms of agriculture, we're always dealing with extremes. Rainfall will run from 14 inches in the panhandle to 55 inches in the southeast. Snowfall from about 0 to 30 inches, with most of that in the northern half of the state. And we span some three plant hardiness zones, zones 6 to 8. In terms of agriculture, there's about 35 million acres farmed in the state, and we have about 87,000 farms. At the time this slide was made, we had about 5.5 million head of cattle, but those numbers are declining dramatically. As many of you may be aware, Oklahoma and Texas both are mired in a very severe drought right now, and cattle numbers are declining drastically. In terms of commodities, we are primarily a livestock state. Cattle, poultry, hogs, and dairy account for most of our farm gate receipts. Our major crops would be wheat and hay. We also have a significant grain industry, and we ship about $2.7 billion in forestry products out of the state every year. Oklahoma State University, or then Oklahoma A&M University, and the Oklahoma Ag Experiment Station were both established in 1890 following the Hatch Act. Being a newer state, we have that distinction that we are one of the few where we are as old as the university, but both the university and the Ag Experiment Station are 17 years older than the state. We were actually established by the territorial legislature in 1890. We are located at Stillwater, right in the middle of the state. And just to show that some things never change, like most land grants, we got the best land around. This was the first known picture of the site of current Oklahoma State University, and you can see it was choice land. Also, as you go on the campus, people will tell you the first building on campus was Old Central. But we like to remind them that, in fact, the first building on campus was the Ag Experiment Station barn, which preceded Old Central by 2 years. Old Central's still around. The barn's long gone. But today, Oklahoma State University is a large, modern, comprehensive university that you see here. We are a five-campus system. We're the flagship campus of that system. We're 9 different colleges, and last year we did $183 million in research activity and have a current enrollment of a little over 24,000 students. And we get everything Texas A&M doesn't want, so just keep sending them, David. We've got a lot of good students coming out of Texas. In terms of our statewide presence, we have 19 locations spread statewide, and the actual number of farms would probably be about 50% higher than that, because we do have a number of separately maintained farms around the Stillwater area. I would emphasize that this is truly a branch station system. Unlike the R&E centers that David described in Texas, we have very few faculty off campus. These are mostly run by non-faculty individuals, but we pretty much cover all of the various climatic regions of the state. We have 9 comprehensive departments on the main campus. Our newest department, next to the last, the Natural Resource Ecology and Management, was one that was formed about 4 to 5 years ago that combined the forestry department with the range faculty from plant and soil sciences and wildlife faculty that we absorbed from arts and sciences. And that's been an extremely successful program. We also have some interdisciplinary programs that we work with, including an environmental science program that spans several colleges, our international programs in agriculture, and we do research with 2 other colleges outside the division, the College of Human Sciences and the College of Veterinary Health Sciences, and we do the latter two through a series of block grants that we give to those 2 colleges. We also have some service units that we manage, the field and research service units, which I'll talk about a little bit more later, ag communications, and foundation seed stocks. And then we have six centers and institutes that we maintain, and I'm going to discuss several of these at a little more length later on as well. The most recent of these is the Institute of Ag Biosciences. This was just prior to completion. We just opened this building about 2 months ago. This is located at Ardmore, Oklahoma. It's right next door to the Samuel Roberts Noble Foundation. This is not your typical branch station. This one will actually have a molecular biology thrust to it, and we'll be working very closely with scientists at the Noble Foundation. In terms of research expenditures, we are the largest unit on the campus. Last year, we did 32% of the research activity on the campus, and over the last 5 years, this has varied anywhere from 32 to 38%. I mentioned the field research and service units, and this was the unit that Dr. Westerman headed. He was the first director of this particular unit. It was set up to manage our branch station system in Oklahoma. And during the last 5 years, Oklahoma has really bucked the national trend, where most states have been looking at consolidating or eliminating branch stations. We've actually expanded. We've opened up three locations during that time period. The station at Ardmore that we just mentioned that was funded through legislative and experiment station funds. And then two additional properties, one in southeast Oklahoma and one in the Panhandle, that were the result of some large bequests that were made to us. And we're currently, at the present time, working on another donation of some land in central Oklahoma that may form an adjunct to one of our other branch stations. So a little bit out of the norm. But what we had seen with our branch stations prior to the forming of the field research unit, our farms were managed by departments, and frankly, they were dying on the vine. There was very little sharing of resources going on between various farms and departments, and the sales that were coming off of those units were being used to fund on-campus activities such as teaching, graduate assistants, and all, and very little was going back into maintenance of the structures and the equipment, and frankly, they were just falling apart. So the decision was made to centralize everything under the experiment station. We set up the Field Research Services Unit, put Dr. Westerman in charge of that, and some of the things that we were able to do to improve the system, of course, central purchasing, we were able to get some economies of scale there. We did a great deal of centralization of resources. We took a lot of the old equipment from all the different stations, sold it off, bought some good equipment, put some policies in place to share equipment between stations, worked with some of our implement dealers to set up a program whereby we could buy a new tractor at state discount prices from the dealer, and then every few hundred hours, the dealer will bring a new tractor out and replace that one, and he'll take the other tractor and go and resell it as essentially new vehicle before it's depreciated. So once we make the initial purchase, we can keep a new tractor in the system continuously. And it's worked well for us. And our dealers have seen this, and several of them are now wanting to get in on the act, so we've got several different implement dealers around the state involved. We also have used federal surplus property quite a bit, and if you've worked this and you're going to do this on a large scale, you need to have a few dedicated people, those who are watching the site and who can pick up the equipment when it becomes available, and those who are minding your books on the accounting side. We also set up a motor pool whereby when we buy a new vehicle, we charge ourselves mileage on that vehicle afterward, and it goes into a depreciation account, and at about 80 to 85,000 miles, we'll depreciate vehicles out and get new vehicles back into the system. And that has worked well to keep new vehicles on the stations, and some of our departments have bought into that concept as well. Dr. Westerman also introduced a lot of professionalization on the stations. We've gone from basically BS, MS people to it's now MS and a few PhD, non-faculty types running these stations. Today, we've got a thriving branch station system that's used by faculty and producers alike. Now I'd like to shift gears a little bit and talk about some of the research that's going on at Oklahoma State, and I'm going to feature just a few programs, but our basic research thrusts are not terribly different from those that David discussed in Texas. But one of the things that really defines Oklahoma is weather. We are subject to extremely variable weather. In fact, I remember when I first moved to Oklahoma, everybody told me, said, you're going to love this place. It's got four distinct seasons. Hail, flood, drought, and tornado. And that's largely true. We're also subject to a lot of fluctuation in weather. And if you look over the last century, you can see we typically go through wet and dry spells, although over the last two or three decades, this has been extremely erratic. And one of the defining events in Oklahoma, of course, was the Dust Bowl. Just literally left people high and dry. But some of the research that was done by the Oklahoma Ag Experiment Station following the Dust Bowl helped farmers to recover and get back into production, introduce conservation practices to prevent an occurrence of this in the future. And we'd like to think that a lot of the work that we did in those days is still having an effect because, as many of you know, Oklahoma and Texas both are mired in a very severe drought right now. And this has been compared to the Dust Bowl. Even though we've seen the high temperatures and the lack of moisture, we've not seen the erosion and all that we saw during the Dust Bowl. So hopefully we did some good. We are also subject to a lot of violent weather, hail, tornadoes, windstorms, ice. And to help our producers, in 1982, we set up the Oklahoma Mesonet in conjunction with the University of Oklahoma. And we set up weather monitoring stations across the state. I think you'll see here it said we had 108 stations in 1993. Today, that number is probably closer to 150. We have at least one in every county. And this particular group has set up a website with a lot of user-friendly ag weather information that our producers can use, such as soil moisture maps, drought maps, and whatnot. They are housed at the University of Oklahoma, so we actually have managed to infiltrate that campus, but we are located there at the National Weather Center in Oklahoma, or at Norman, Oklahoma, and the Oklahoma Climatological Survey is also a part of that, so we're able to marshal our resources to better predict weather and help our producers through this. David mentioned energy. Well, energy's big in Oklahoma as well. It is our major economic driver. We've always been a major producer of energy. We are currently the sixth largest producer of crude oil and the second largest producer of natural gas. But today we're looking at some other renewable sources, including cellulosic sources such as switchgrass that can be converted to ethanol or butanol or other biofuels. We are also looking at an old crop, sweet sorghum. This crop has the advantage that you can express the juice from it and ferment the sugar directly for ethanol production and then use the bagasse from that process as a cellulosic source. Also, we are part of the Oklahoma Bioenergy Center. This was established by the Oklahoma legislature about 4 years ago as a consortium of Oklahoma State, OU, and the Samuel Roberts Noble Foundation. It was authorized at $40 million, and we had received the first $14 million of that before the economy went south. But we are hearing some rumblings from the legislature that there is a mood to begin to put more money back into this center going forward. The research programs of the Oklahoma Bioenergy Center run everywhere from feedstock development to the conversion process. And I might point out one of our bioenergy centers, the Bio-Based Products and Energy Center on the main campus. I was in Washington about 2 weeks ago with the director of that center to receive one of the NIFA Partnership Awards for Mission Integration. This particular center encompasses 24 faculty, mostly from the Division of Agriculture, but we do have faculty from a couple of other colleges, working everything from feedstock development to conversion. We have a very strong gasification effort there at Oklahoma State. We also serve as the South Central Center of the Sun Grant Initiative, and over the last 4 or 5 years, we've been able to bring in about $9.2 million for regional grants to support bioenergy research throughout the South Central region. And this particular center, the Bio-Based Products and Energy Center, does what you want a center to do. Go out, seek external funding, and try to become self-supporting. And they've been able to do this in a big way with several large grants, including a USDA Birdie grant and NSF EPSCoR grant, and they're currently in the process of applying for some additional funds. Also, one of our partners, Abengoa, just recently received a $133 million loan guarantee to establish a cellulosic ethanol plant at Hugoton, Kansas, which sits right on the Oklahoma border. And we expect to partner with them as part of this center, as well as a lot of the feedstocks for this plant will be drawn from the Oklahoma Panhandle. And as part of our gasification effort, we were able to license some unique organisms for fermenting syngas to ethanol. And the company that licensed that technology for us earlier this year received a $250 million loan guarantee from USDA to establish a cellulosic ethanol plant in Alabama using our technology. And while we're on energy, we mentioned weather. When you talk about weather in Oklahoma, it's mostly about wind. And if you look at this wind map of Oklahoma, you'll see that western Oklahoma is particularly well suited for the development of wind energy, and we're starting to see a lot of wind farms crop up in this area. This provides additional sources of income for many of our producers in those areas, but as with any opportunity, there are some challenges associated with it, some legal challenges, as well as a number of wildlife issues that we're having to address. We've also recently established a large biosecurity institute, particularly as relates to crops. Most of you will probably remember the E. coli outbreak in spinach several years ago that shut the industry down for several weeks. We had an E. coli outbreak in Europe earlier this year that killed several people. We're currently having a listeria outbreak in cantaloupe in this country. But besides the human health hazards associated with these are economic disasters, and it really behooves us to be able to track these things down rapidly so that we can shut them off and get these industries up and operating again. And to that end, we established an institute, the National Institute for Microbial Forensics and Food and Agricultural Biosecurity. This is a joint effort between the Division of Agriculture at Oklahoma State University and the OSU Tulsa Health Science Center's Forensics Program. We have 5 dedicated faculty positions associated with this particular program, and they were recently invited to set up their labs in the Henry Bellman Research Center. This is the newest building on the campus. It's a premier research lab that's open by invitation only. So We were thrilled that this group was one of the first invitees in there, and when you walk in the front door, that's the first one that you see. We've also established a BSL-2 greenhouse and laboratory for them in the Noble Research Center. David mentioned wheat. Oklahoma is also big in the wheat world, and like Texas A&M, we also have a large wheat improvement team. It consists of breeders, entomologists, pathologists, cereal chemists, entomologists, a whole spectrum of individuals. And like the program in Texas, it has been very successful. In the last 5 years, we've gone from about 10% or less of the varieties in Oklahoma being of OSU origin to this last variety survey from USDA, it was up to 38%. So they've done an outstanding job. Recently, we've added a molecular component to that to speed the process up through marker-assisted selection, as well as to try to identify some unique genes within wheat. We also have what is known as the Wheat Pasture Research Station at Marshall, Oklahoma. Many of our producers graze their wheat prior to going for grain yield. And our wheat varieties are evaluated under that dual system, so they've been evaluated for both grain and for forage, and we sell them under the moniker graze and grain wheats. We have recently started to license those varieties exclusively. The number of advantages that this provides to us, one of the major ones being that it does provide research support for the program, and it transfers the responsibility for legal infringement and enforcement of the PVP to the licensee and keeps the university out of court. But this has become the second largest revenue generator for the university in terms of royalties. We also have a major livestock industry. We currently operate both as range operations, and we have three branch stations that are primarily range stations, as well as a feeding unit on the main campus, and we're in the process of adding electronic feeders to these to increase their capabilities. Also, the legislature established the Robert M. Kerr Food and Ag Products Center several years ago to work with the food processing industry in the state in areas of food safety, value-added processing, post-harvest processing, and most recently they've been working with the developing wine industry in the state. And one last group that I'll mention is just the New Product Development Center. This is a joint effort with the College of Engineering and an economic development unit of the campus to work with rural and small manufacturers, providing assistance from engineering technology to business practices and advertising. Just a few quick comments. Where do the experiment stations stand going forward? Well, it's really all about resources. If we're going to meet the challenges of the future, we've got to be able to hire the best and brightest faculty when we have the opportunities to hire. We've got to maintain facilities and equipment worthy of doing research and keep a funding source to keep the operation going. Key to that is we've got to maintain our base funding, that is our state appropriations as well as our federal formula funds, Hatch, Smith-Lever, and McIntyre-Stennis, because these are the funds that hire permanent faculty, allow for continuity, infrastructure development, and also promote multi-state collaboration. But in that vein, we also have to be able to show strength in the competitive area, because it makes a stronger case for formula funding if we can go out and leverage those formula dollars that we get. And it also improves the quality of our science. We also have to maintain a balanced portfolio of funding, looking everywhere from capacity, grants, commodity groups, contracts, self-generated being sales and fees, royalties, and endowments. In terms of grants, we've always looked to USDA, but keep in mind that USDA grants are some of the smallest in the federal government, and the USDA budget is one of the smallest in the federal government. And if we're going to grow the enterprise, we really need to look at some of the other non-traditional sources, such as NSF, NIH, DOE, DOD. These are potential growth areas. They foster innovation, and in many cases, they play full IDCs. So we have to keep a balanced program between applied and basic research and between regionally and nationally focused research efforts if we're going to serve all of our various constituencies. And partnerships are not a luxury anymore, they're a necessity. The problems today are so large and complex, it's hard for one organization to wrap around them, and with tight budgets, we can't afford the luxury of duplication. And then lastly, we must remain true to that land-grant mission. We must have a close working relationship between education, research, and extension. Remember, other parts of campus do research and teaching. The part they're missing is the outreach, the extension. We've got the full package here in agriculture, and we need to be able to take advantage of that. So with that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions.
Come on, there we go.
I don't know that it's a question, but I think one of the things that maybe
We do. It's a friendly rivalry.
Well, I was interested in Brent Westman had that change over, and he said many of the Senator Farr's were departmental. And do many of the projects own equipment, or is it the property of the Senator?
Some of both. Basically, if the project leader wants to buy the equipment themselves or the department wants to buy it, they're responsible for maintaining it. We will let them house it and use it on the property, but they're responsible for the maintenance. But we have a combination of both.
You know, a new faculty, somebody gets up to the experiment station centers to help them, and having the equipment is often a problem.
Right, and that often goes as part of startup packages. But what I've done with startup packages, once the faculty member tells me what he needs, we just figure a cash amount, we transfer the cash to him, and then he's responsible for purchasing whatever it is he needs. And if he has a mid-course correction, well, fine and good.
Did you adopt a chargeback when you went to centralize?
Only for a few things. Some of our growth chamber facilities we do charge for, and a couple of our new state-of-the-art greenhouses we do, but land, no. And most of our older greenhouses we don't, but we stay on people pretty good so they don't go in there and squat and take up space they're not using.
Mm-hmm. How do you morph that into, from privately owned to a research station? Do you lease that out for the year?
Actually, both of the two bequests that we received were under lease when we got them when the individuals passed away. In fact, we were unaware of both of these bequests until they actually happened. But we left them under lease and generated some income from that as we got ready to transition these to experiment station property, so it wasn't just an overnight transition. And that's something I would suggest to anybody if you're going to try to incorporate one of these. If you can get a couple of years of breathing room, it's a good thing. And we are working on another possible donation in central Oklahoma. Now, the two we opened, the one in the Panhandle and the one in the southeast, as well as the one we're negotiating on, they're not full-blown stations. We're operating them as satellites out of some of our other stations, so they're under a single superintendent. Cost savings. The university has an Office of Technology Licensing. I work very closely with an individual over there. We've kind of got a dedicated individual that works with agriculture, but it's worked very well. I did a lot of that myself when I was in Mississippi, and believe me, it's worth every penny you pay them to do it. Greene County, Alabama. And I believe the feedstock they're planning to use there is municipal waste. It's not a dedicated feedstock at this point.
Okay.